So welcome to the second Q&A if you're a part of this round. And we're just going over again, I'm just repeating myself, we're going to go over some of the questions that we missed. And, of course, if you have to break off early, we are always send this out as a recording. But let's get started. It's funny because this question has been around for, I think, at least 2 weeks, and she didn't get a chance to get the answer, so I'm just going to dive right in. Very quick practical question. How do you, JJ, feel about chewing gum while on the cleanse in order to keep from eating and satisfy need to chew when doing the shakes twice a day?
Well, here's the deal with chewing gum. Chewing gum is going to I personally hate chewing gum. Now, I hate chewing gum not only because it looks tacky. Don't you think? I mean,
I don't chew gum at all.
It's like, and I used to be a big gum chewer. My mom's like, honey, stop it.
I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's like, knock it off. But because it stimulates stomach acid and then you don't give it any food. So actually, I think it makes you even hungrier. So I am really not a fan of chewing gum. Now, if you're hungry, we need to address that, right? So if you're hungry, the first thing is see if you, and we really have to talk about what I would call titrating up fire, because, and I'm going to clear up a lot of questions with this one thing. If you are having stinky gas, okay, I want to make sure you're taking, if you are one of the stinky gas people and you know who you are, you've written in, make sure you're using plant enzymes and the Bacillus coagulans. Make sure you're getting in the probiotics and the enzymes. If you're one of those people who gets gas and it gets worse and worse and worse and worse throughout the day, and then I would recommend using those Berber caps for a month and then adding in the probiotics. But if you're someone that feels like the minute you start doing this, you got a little constipated, you got gassy and bloated and some of that stinky gas, you most likely didn't bring your fiber up slowly enough. And so you need to bring that fiber up slowly and make sure you're doing a load of water in between. And what I tell people to do, because when you say just drink water, it just doesn't happen. So get yourself a safe water bottle and track it, because what you measure, you can improve. When you get up in the morning, drink 16 ounces. Drink another 8 to 16 ounces 30 to 60 minutes before each meal. Drink another 8 ounces before bed to shut down evening hunger pangs. And limit your fluid to 8 ounces with meals. Drink a lot in between. But whenever I think of hunger, the first thing I'm going to think of is making sure you're getting adequate water intake. So often we're not hungry, we're thirsty. Number one. Number two, make sure that each meal has clean, lean protein, healthy fats, and fiber. If you're hungry with those shakes, perhaps you need to, you know, add another scoop of, say, freshly ground flaxseed meal or chia. We've talked about the fact that we're doing like a half a scoop of MediBulk. Now, you might be able to do a scoop and not mind it. For some of us, we feel that it makes it sort of like dirt pudding. But if that's not you, we're good. But try throwing in a tablespoon of chia or freshly ground flax as well. Make sure you're getting berries. Make sure you're making that fiber the way that you the way we've described it, because, I mean, the people making the shake the way we've described it, they're saying, hey, do I have to eat again? Now, genetically, there are people who are just hungrier. They have a bigger appetite. It's part of something called the FDO gene polymorphism, or they've got reduced satiety. They don't get satiated as well. Again, water, protein, healthy fats, and fiber work well here, but for some people, even if you do all that, they're still hungry. I'm going to tell you about two products. Now, I don't know if you guys have gotten these up yet, but these things, and I was looking for the actual stuff on them, but, of course, my computer did this little wacky doodle. Here, let me see what I can get here. There's two products that just came out. One's called Apostation, and one's called Satiacin. And these two products were created to help boost your metabolism and get control of your appetite and cravings. They help stabilize blood sugar levels, support good healthy neurotransmitter balance for serotonin, which makes you crave sugar, and dopamine, which makes you just hungry. They improve stress tolerance. Remember, stress on its own can make you hungrier. There's always those people out there, Jackie, who get stressed and not hungry. I don't know who they are. They're not me. I know that.
Is this like the hunger and craving support pack, describing?
Yeah, sign me up, get me those. I know the minute they come out, I'm like, Susan, you know, even though I actually usually am not hungry, and I still want them.
Yeah, well, especially, yeah, I'm also, you know, that same person that you are, but I'm glad that you are answering this right away, because a couple people did write in and say, you know, you keep talking about how everybody's so full, I'm not. What's wrong
with
me?
And there's a lot there with genetics, I got to tell you. So, I mean, what can make you hungry? Genes play a huge role in appetite and satiety. Huge. 40 to 70% of our variance in weight and appetite and eating behavior is genetic. So anyone looking at someone going, oh, that person lacks willpower, and they're, you know, I just want to reach out and smack them, because they don't recognize that some people do have a genetic disadvantage. Now, it does not mean you have to say, well, I just, you know, forget it, I'm just stuck. It's not the case. But you want to pull in every single tool you possibly can. So good night's sleep, huge. Stress management, huge. Water, 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 huge. Protein, fat, and fiber, huge. But then, like, I don't know, I'm thinking this stuff, since it came out, we've been like, yahoo. So
yeah.
There are two products. They do different things. One works more on satiety. One works more on appetite. Those are different. Appetite's where you're always feeling hungry. Satiety is you ate and you still feel hungry. But the other cool thing that they do is they also help with enhancing thermogenesis, which means you burn fat better, and improving energy, which, of course, if you're enhancing thermogenesis, you improve energy. So they're meant to be taken together, satiacin and apostasin. And if you start the day with one of each, and then you also take one of each, I'd say round, you don't have to take these with food, by the way, like 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, so that those afternoon and evening hunger pangs won't zing you. Don't take it at night. One of them does have a little caffeine, bad. 1 o'clock, though, you should be fine. And for those people, I actually asked the company to put this in a packet with Relora Plus, which is our product that they developed for people who have any kind of cortisol stress-induced weight gain, which
is you put that in the stress package. Yep.
Well, I was like, let's make a little packet of Relora Plus satiacin and apostasin. I mean, come on, you know?
Right,
And let's have it for January, you know?
Yep, and I love that you're doing that, because it's exactly what you're saying, where a lot of family members will just say, don't you have any willpower? Like, they're just sitting there going, I don't understand why you're always so hungry. And it's a lot of judgment sometimes.
Hmm? Yes, they're being mean. You know, it's interesting, because I had a guy I was dating who never got hungry. I mean, I would be, you know, I eat within an hour of waking up. He could go forever. I was like, okay, I have to eat now. He could go 8-9 hours without eating. I have to eat every 4 to 6 hours. And if I have to eat sooner than that, I know I boo-booed. You know, normally I have a good breakfast. I can go 4 hours, 5 hours. But if I'm hungry in 2 hours, something's wrong.
Yeah, me too. Same here.
And, you know, the biggest thing that I see when I'm really hungry is, boy, when I don't get a good night's sleep, like Las Vegas, for example, you know, yesterday driving home after going to bed too late and getting up too early, I was just like a little hungrier than I should have been. Thank God I was in a car, you know, out in the middle of nowhere, so there's nothing I could do. So,
right, and you're just reiterating that, the sleep. I mean, you have to look at all those things and start just going through the checklist and saying, okay,
exactly, and that's why it's not just, you know, just so, oh, I'm hungry, okay, do this. So, you know, and again, I always like to think first things first. It's just like when people say, oh, I have no energy, what can you give me for energy? I'm like, well, are you sleeping? You know, and if you're not sleeping, not much I can do there. So that's the first thing, but please don't chew gum to do that. I think that just crashes your gut, because think about it, your brain's going, oh, you're eating. I think your blood sugar rises a little bit because of that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So ding on the chewing gum. And then
the next question was where – oh.
But you know what, I'm reading this too. This person has, like, the need to chew. She says, and satisfy the need to chew when doing shakes 2 times a day. You know what you can do if you have, like, the need to chew thing here? Mm-hmm. Is you can make my warm winter shake thing, where I actually heat up berries or cherries, and then I make a warm coconut milk flaxseed meal Medibulk chocolate thing, and then I mix it all together and I eat it. So if someone wants to chew, you can make, or you can just make a thick shake. So
You know, I have to definitely underscore that about the chia seeds, because I don't know if anybody here has waited for the chia seeds to sort of gel a little bit, but they become this chewy texture in a drink. So just as an FYI, the chia seeds, you know, that hasn't happened with the other stuff that I've used, but those chia seeds really force you almost to have that like hearty, chewy, nutty thing that you might be looking for.
Yes. So, you know, and the other one that you can do instead of chia is if you can behave yourself with this, and you're near a Trader Joe's, they have those sliced almonds, and you can throw those in and kind of mix those in. That make it a little crunchy. You could,
yeah.
I mean, there's, you know, so you can make things crunchy if you are so inclined to be a cruncher.
Yeah. Yep, I love it. All right, so yeah. Where does quinoa go on the list of foods? High fiber, starchy carb, yes, or somewhere else because so much protein, yes.
Okay, let's clarify, and I'm just going to look this up because I am getting really just tired of this, I got to tell you, like hearing of these things have so much protein, okay? Because, you know, something like nuts, you always hear that nuts have high protein, right?
And it's like all fat. If you look
well,
it up.
Nuts are 80 to 90% fat. So if nuts are 80 to 90% fat, how can they be high in protein? They can't be 80 to 90% protein and 80 to 90%, you know what I mean? It's like you get one or the other. But you only, so it always frustrates me when I read that. I'm like, wait a minute, you know, it can't be high. So,
right.
Of course, now I'm trying to find this quickly online, and it's like nowhere in here.
Yeah, it's not off the top of my head either.
It's not pulling. But I do want to clear that up. It says here, 1 cup of quinoa is 5.5 grams of protein. So a cup of quinoa, if I'm thinking correctly, probably is about 40 grams of here, I can probably do it this way. It's probably about 40 grams of carbs. So you can't, I mean, you can see already that, here, I'll get the real deal here. Okay. Amounts per serving, 185 grams. Okay, a cup. So there are 40 grams of carbs. There are 8 grams of protein. What's it high in? Trick question. 4 grams of fat, 8 grams of protein, 40 grams of carbs. Which one is it high in?
And I think people sort of maybe have said it's high in protein because so many things are so low in protein. So I think it's almost a relative thing that they start to think. But that's why it's good to just really look it up and get the facts so that you know what's going on.
Yeah, so if you're looking at like bare minimum that someone should get a day, and by the way, this is incredibly low, like this is the bare minimum, you better be getting this in 60. But I think most of us do better on more protein. And so if you're looking at a meal, you know, getting in 25, 30 grams of protein, and I'm telling people to have a half a cup of quinoa because you don't want to have 40 grams of carbohydrates. That's a load. Even 5 grams of fiber, still 35 grams of carbs there, and that's if you don't eat any other carbs. It's a load of carbs, loads.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So quinoa, you would want to have a half a cup. That would be considered your serving, cooked.
Right.
So
I wanted to make sure.
Yeah,
half a cup for your whole meal. That's it.
That's it. And so that would be 4 grams of protein.
All right. And so what about zucchini, strangely absent from the veggie list, or does this count as summer squash?
It's summer squash. That's
it is summer squash, yes.
Somehow.
All right. Next question. I'm not sure if this is a question. Yes. This is a history, which, you know, maybe we can learn from. It does go 10 years ago, I was 100 pounds overweight. I'm 52 and postmenopausal. Eating clean and green for almost a year, counting points, Furman, Weight Watchers, feeling fabulous.
I don't know. Okay, yeah, I don't know what all this stuff means, but okay.
Yeah, I think, and I think the final, you know, I think let's skip a little bit to what was happening on the cleanse, because maybe that'll be, did the cleanse for 2 days and wanted to pass out. I'm so backed out, I need a plunger.
Wait a minute, we have to give some background here. This is someone who's got a medical problem.
Okay.
She has a redundant colon, she's been diagnosed, and only one thing has ever worked, and it's Miralax. And I think this is very important for people to understand. She's got an issue. She's been diagnosed. She found one thing that worked, and she stopped doing it. Don't do that, please. Okay?
Okay.
If you are under a doctor's care, the doctor has told you to use something, you don't go off of it. So she's under a doctor's care. The doctor told her to use Miralax once a day. As long as she does that, she has a bowel movement every day. She still, though, has really bad gas often. Sometimes she even has to use a suppository. So this is a longstanding problem. The only thing that's ever been shown to work is Miralax. Don't stop using it is what I would say, because she stopped using it and got backed up. Well, her body was absolutely used to using this thing, right? Then on the third day, she did a shake, added it in, back the Miralax, and now she's, I think I put the wrong, I've got my, so let's see. On the third day, nothing's happened, still pain. Fourth day, she started to have gas again, et cetera. I'm going to just cut to the chase. Okay, here's the thing. If you've got something you're using for a medical condition like that and your body's used to using it, don't stop using it. That's something you would need to discuss with your doctor, but there's no reason you can't stay on Miralax on this cleanse. And if your body's adjusted to it and that's what you need to do at regular bowel movements, you need to stay on it. If you go off it, your body's going to react. And if you, then it will take a couple days to go back on, right? But this cleanse works just fine using that Miralax. By the way, she talks about having a green shake, spinach, parsley, cucumber, blackberries, and a little pineapple. That is not a green shake, just to be very clear. Spinach, parsley, cucumber, great. Blackberries, okay, but that's not, those are fruit. Pineapple, way too high glycemic. Mm-hmm. So the couple things I'm seeing here is if you're on something that's been working for you, and especially if you're on any kind of medication, you'd never stop that unless you work with your doctor on it. That's mm-hmm. something to be absolutely clear on. And then I also see here that she started with dinner, had 2 cups of clean lentil soup. Well, that would not be what's on our program because I wouldn't, half a cup of lentils is basically a serving. So what I would say with you here is to start from the beginning, get yourself normalized back with using your Miralax the way you've been using it. Don't stop using that. You've always had this bad smelling gas. I'm hoping that maybe probiotics and using the enzymes will help here. I'd really like to recommend that. Anything you do, you really should be speaking to your doctor. Also look at doing vitamin C and magnesium. You know, those would be a big help there too, since you still have to use a suppository periodically to help. I'm always going to look at, I would look at taking Epsom salts baths. I would look at using magnesium and vitamin C on a regular basis. I would look at having probiotics as part of your diet. I would look at doing a really good enzyme to help with digestion, like the plant enzymes is where I would start there. I would look at doing a DNA DIFX test to see what's going on with digestion and how well you're digesting fats, proteins, and carbs. As far as the other part of the question, which is 10 years ago I was 100 pounds overweight, I'm postmenopausal, I'd like to lose 10 more pounds. Here's the thing. Let's look at all of weight and figure out where things go. Number one, we know your body's not a bank account, it's a chemistry lab. How you eat, what you eat, when you eat, it matters. Pulling out reactive foods generally will see people really make a big difference. You are still getting in a little gluten. You were still getting in some soy, so let's see what happens now with pulling out the rest of the foods, staying on that program that helped you before, adding in some things that can help with gut healing, and see if that helps. But in order to lose weight, you want to be, first of all, pulling out reactive foods, then re-challenging to build a diet for you. I like to go to the next level and look at genetic testing to see what fits best for someone, to see really what's the right diet for them. Exercise has got to be dialed in there. You must be doing burst-style training, moving at least an hour a day, just doing anything. Don't count that as exercise because that's just moving more. And doing some resistance-style training that has to be built in. Other things that are huge issues for weight loss, sleep is the number one, 7 to 9 hours of quality sleep a night. Tolerating stress well. I'm not going to tell you to not have stress because we all do, but being able to handle stress well because stress raises stress hormones that make you store fat better, crave more foods, hungrier, right, not burn off fat as well. If you're postmenopausal, you'll have to see how you do. Some people do a lot better with some bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. That's a decision with you and your doctor. I think the best resource for just learning more about that is to read Suzanne Summers' Sexy Years. She's really well-researched. And then also make sure you've got good bone density there and good cardiovascular health, because as estrogen goes down, you end up with issues with bone health and heart health and brain health. And then also looking at toxicity, because too high of a toxic load can create a lot of problems. And looking at thyroid issues and insulin and leptin issues. So, I mean, all these things come into play. But you first start with good diet, good exercise, sleep, stress management. If you're still not seeing what you need to see, then you can start looking at those other issues, right? Are you there?
Excellent. Yeah, well, and I also was I was just thinking that even just the last two questions, you had recommended what is in the Plus kit, and some people didn't order the Plus. They just ordered sort of the regular one without that GI support. So we're definitely going to make that GI support pack available to members.
Okay, good. Because I see what I think that, honestly, I wish everyone would just do the Plus. You'd do better if you did.
Yes. Right.
You know?
Well, I did. So. I did. So I can speak personally, too. The next one, I'm entering week two and haven't really seen any improvements in my skin. How long might it take for my skin issues to clear? I've been hoping for it since you and JJ, this was written to me, had experienced skin improvements. I'm 56. I've had breakouts on my chin and jawline for as long as I can remember. I've been a big dairy consumer before, skim milk, non-fat cottage cheese, Greek yogurt, which I've all eliminated. I'm feeling like my energy's improving, but I'd really love to have clear skin for Christmas. Thanks, Lori, Santa Barbara. I can relate to that.
We all can. Hey,
yes.
First off, anyone writing questions, the more info you can give us, the better. Like, if you which what you're on exactly, because I don't know. Like, sometimes when you initially start a detox cleanse, taking things that improve detoxification, you actually can break out a little bit more before you get better. So just giving you a heads up on that. Yeah,
exactly what happened to me.
Yeah, a week or two or three, you just kind of go through this, and you know, we say better out than in. Right?
Yes.
So
yes.
There's that issue. But let's say that's not the issue at all, that you've pulled dairy. I would give things a full month to really see, but usually it's within a week or two. And it really also depends on cycling. I find that the only time I have issues at all now is if I'm cycling, I might get one zip before my period. But if I eat dairy at all, I'm done. Boom, zit. It's amazing. So I would say with that, not knowing if you are doing any kind of a detox or not, if you're still seeing issues, then a couple things. Number one, jawline acne a lot of times can be really livery and hormonal stuff. So I'm assuming, but I can't really assume, that you are no longer getting your periods. But I don't know. You might be on hormone replacement therapy, et cetera. So first thing I do is check the hormonal connection. You know, and also check testosterone levels. That could do it. I don't know if you're taking something like DHEA or testosterone. That'll definitely do it. Look at your diet, and I would add GLA, and I definitely make sure you're taking enzymes, especially like the BioGest or betaine, something that's going to help break down protein, because if it's any kind of a rosacea acne, that will help there too. So those are the things I would look at for it that can make another improvement. But I'm kind of operating with not quite as much info as I wish I had, but hopefully that'll help.
Okay, great.
Okay.
And, you know, if you have any more information, that Lori, I think it's Laura, yes, Lori from Santa Barbara, definitely email in. Next question, quick question. As someone who's tried and failed to lose weight more than once, I'm always skeptical even when I have success. My scale shows a 5-pound loss in 1 week. I know JJ said that rapid weight loss is a sign of recovery from inflammation, but is inflammation just a fancy way of saying water retention? Anyway, let me just finish the rest of it. I'm feeling pretty content with the meal plan shakes. I love the simplicity of the results of not having any cravings. I've lost 5 pounds, which is very cool, but can I expect the same rapid consistency of weight loss if I continue, or do the results slow down after inflammation's cured? Also, just want to say thanks for all the emails to the group, for the great call and answer sessions. I was really afraid of getting ripped off when I signed up, because I've signed up to some gimmicky things in the past, but I've been impressed with the level of thoughtful responses on the Q&As. Thanks to both of you and to everyone in PT who openly shares their questions and experiences.
All right. So, well, what is inflammation? Inflammation is fluid retention. I mean, that's what it is. Mm-hmm. So you will see rapid weight loss on this, and you won't continue to get that kind of weight loss. That's definitely for sure. What I see with people in the first week is anywhere from 5 to 10 pounds. And then after that, it really depends on how much weight you have to lose. I mean, one of the things I used to do on Dr. Phil, you don't know this, Jackie, but one of my jobs was to figure out how much weight someone needed to lose and then how much we really needed to get them on target with each week in order for them to stay on track. And if they didn't stay on track, then I had to come in and figure out what was going on so that we could tweak them, like what was going on weight loss resistance-wise. If someone's got a little bit of weight to lose, initially, we'll still see a big dump usually, you know, 5 or 10 pounds. But if they only have another 10 pounds to lose, they might go down to losing, you know, I mean, typical weight loss at that point is 2 pounds a week, 1 to 2 pounds a week, and it's going to depend on what else they're doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how it's going to depend on how bad their diet was before, what's it like now, what is going on with exercise, and then how well their thyroid works, and are they stressed, and are they sleeping well, and all this stuff.
Right.
So
right.
And that's why it's like I keep saying we're not a bank account. So it really depends on what else you have going on. But let's say you've got 20 to 30 pounds to lose. Initially, in the first, say, 2 to 3 weeks, you should see overall at least 10 pounds off. That's normal.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to taper down to 1 to 3 pounds a week. If you're still a cycling female, you'll have 1 week a month. They'll just kind of all go to hell, and you'll probably just stay the same. But if you start to see that you're not losing any weight, that's when you need to, of course, this is why we're journaling and looking at what we're eating and exercise and all that to make sure it's not just something silly like, oh, I've added in a mocha every day, right?
Mm-hmm.
But assuming that's not the issue, then you have to start going, okay, is my thyroid okay? Do I have any issues with my adrenals? Is my insulin okay? What else could be going on that could get in the way of it,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's just something overall to look at. I think that answers it, yeah. And I'm going to go right to the next one because it says, premenopausal woman who gained 10 pounds for no reason, can this detox help? Well, you obviously gained 10 pounds for some reason. It just may have been no outward reason. It could have been that your hormones have gone into a massive crazy flux or your thyroid took a nosedive. Something happened, right? It's interesting. I gained weight just because I got stressed and I got something called small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. Changed nothing. So there's always something going on. It's just, what was that thing? Can this help? It depends on why it happened. If you gained weight because you got stressed, you got gut bacterial overgrowth, and you started reacting to foods, yeah, it's going to help. If you've gained weight because your estrogen-progesterone ratios went out of control and now you're shifted into a much more insulin-resistant state, may not make a big difference. And also, I don't know, you know, what's gone on with you in terms of overall what you were doing before and what you're doing now. So I can't predict it, unfortunately. But in most cases, even with tough weight loss cases, I mean, this is what I put as my beginning in my license program for doctors, this phase. We do it for 3 weeks because in 95% of all cases, people are going to lose weight doing this. Now, continuing to lose weight if they've got an area of weight loss resistance, if they're premenopausal, if they have thyroid issues, then they'll need to handle those. But we usually see something. It's rare not to see anything. As far as why coconut milk, coconut milk is one of the most amazing foods on the planet. It's thermic. It's got medium chain triglycerides that actually help you burn fat. It helps control your appetite, improve satiety. And it also is antibacterial, antiviral, and antifungal. I mean, it's just an amazing, amazing food. Do we have any soup recipes, Jackie? Because someone said soup for cold weather lunch.
Yeah, well, the cleanse soup, which people love. There's also many in the magic fridge that I put together. We call it cream of broccoli, but really we use coconut milk. With at least 6-7 different high vegetable coconut milk, and then you can just add your protein in and you have a complete meal. It's fantastic.
Okay, cool. And what I would say here too, now I just kind of lost my train of thought. Okay, never mind. It went right away. It was there and gone.
So I'm just
going to... I know what I was going to say. If you're one of those people and it's freezing cold and you're eating a shake and then you're freezing for an hour, what you can do is you can make, and again, I kind of stumbled upon this one late night when I had a craving. I took protein powder and coconut milk, heated it up, And I made it really thick, so I didn't add a ton of coconut milk. And then I warmed up some berries. I actually warmed up these black cherries and berries. And I put that all together, have a little bit of fiber in with the coconut milk and chocolate. And then I put some slivered almonds over the top. And it's sort of like soup, sort of like soupy pie filling.
Yeah, pudding. Yum.
Yeah,
and I just realized this is a live call, and so I just want to get it's Bernice on just to tell everybody how to ask a question if you'd like to ask a question.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please hit *0. I'll collect your name and place you right back onto the call. Once again, that's *0.
Great. So we'll go into one more question and then see if there are live ones. How am I not going to gain all the weight back when I stop eating shakes for two meals a day? On day 5, I've lost 6 pounds. It's great, but it seems too good to be true or last beyond the cleanse. Thanks, Megan. I just wanted to also say very quickly that my mom scaled back to one shake a day, and she is still losing weight. And my mom is 65 years old, you know, past sort of the menopause, and she is still losing weight. Just a real person. Just wanted to, you know, give you that example. But
well, I love it. Not only a real person, but a real, you know, 65.
Yeah, it's my mom. Yeah,
my mom.
Exactly. She was so excited. She even emailed me and said, "You will never believe I went out to dinner with my friends. I had a glass of wine, and I still lost a half a pound the next day," something that had actually never happened for her. So, you know, she did scale back to one shake a day. She loves it, you know, wakes up, cannot do without her shake, but does not do it at lunch or dinner.
So here's what I would say about that. I think one of the most important things that you can do long-term for a strategy is replace at least one meal a day with a shake. And I honestly do it every single day. And I even travel with my magic bullet. You all have heard me do this. And now they have the little boxes of Aseptic-packed coconut milk. I travel with those. And it's just something I feel so much better and normal when I do this wherever I go. So that's step one, is I literally travel everywhere with my shakes. The reason we have you replace two meals a day for a shake is actually not for the calorie control side of it at this point. It's to make it simple so you don't have to think. If you want to, what I found in weight loss reduction, and like when people are trying to lose weight, the less choice, the better. In fact, if you read Brian Wansink, who talks about mindless eating, such a good book. If you've not read this book is amazing. And one of the things that he says is if you have more choices, like, you know, I mean, the buffet example, and of course I go to Vegas, I will never in my life go to a buffet, but I would say who doesn't overeat at a buffet? It's almost impossible not to. You have too many choices. So the reason we do two shakes a day is to make it very controlled so it's easier to keep those food, reactive foods out, but also just so you don't have to think. So it's not that all of a sudden you're going to go back and you're eating 10,000 calories a day in your lunch meal. It's just really to reduce those choices out, not have to worry about getting more of those food intolerant foods in, et cetera. When you add in that lunch meal, it shouldn't make any difference.
Yep, it didn't for me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see it making it for anybody. And some people just say, I mean, gosh, if I'm traveling or just home and being lazy and maybe we're making something for the kids for dinner I don't want, I'll do a shake. So it's just kind of one of those tools in your toolkit. I do find if I'm like kind of feeling like, oh, I'd like to do a cleanse this week, I'll throw in two shakes a day that week. So it's kind of a tool to keep in your toolkit, but understand why we put it in there. And really it was just so you just take out those choices.
Absolutely. So Bernice, do we have any live calls or should we continue with the questions that were written in?
At this moment, we have no questions.
Okay, great. So next one, hi, Jackie and JJ, love your series on detox and cleanse. Thank you. My question, most conventional advice is to eat every 3 to 4 hours, whether you are hungry or not, to keep the metabolism high as you lose weight. However, the cleanse program stretches a longer period between meals, more like 4 to 6, very little emphasis on between meal snacking. I recall, JJ, that this teaches our bodies to burn fat. To me, burning fat means the metabolism is working, right? Can you explain how these two approaches seem contradictory, as both are trying to get us to lose fat by burning it? How does the difference in time between meals impact the insulin response, et cetera? Please be as technical as possible, as I can completely enjoy the science in what you're teaching us. Warm regards, C.
Okay, you asked for it, C. Thank you for this question. No, I'm so happy. Thank you for this question because this one makes me insane. And where it all started for me was, you know, when I was teaching workshops with Dr. Diana Schwartzbein, who's just a brilliant gal, the Schwartzbein principle, and when people were adrenally exhausted or insulin resistant, she had them eating 3 meals and 2 snacks a day until they got adrenally healthy. Then I was on Dr. Phil, and Dr. Phil's book had you eating, by the way, cereal with milk and a glass of juice for breakfast. Do I need to say more there? But 3 meals and 2 to 3 snacks. And so I was teaching these workshops on overcoming weight loss resistance, and I was teaching 3 meals and 2 snacks. And I remember a doctor questioned me, why would you have people do that? And I started to really go, why would I? Because everything I was teaching in that seminar, I had to back up with science. And I started to look at it, and I went, okay, wait a minute. Why would you need to eat every 2 to 3 hours? You know, if you're, in fact, eating to boost your metabolism, hold on. Because, yes, digestion takes energy. But does it take as much energy as the food you ate? It's not negative. I love the idea. You ate this grapefruit and actually took more calories to digest it. No, it didn't. Wouldn't that be great? It doesn't work that way. You know, when you eat, yes, you're going to use calories for digestion. And by the way, you can raise your metabolism and not, it doesn't necessarily mean you're burning fat. Those don't go hand in hand. Okay? You could increase the amount of calories you're spending without making them spend from fat. You could be breaking down muscle. But just because you're raising your metabolism for digestion doesn't mean you're raising it enough to counteract the amount of calories, okay? So that's number one. But then let's also look at what happens when you eat. When you eat food and you start to chew, you're going to raise blood sugar. If that wasn't the case, we could take a blood sugar read when we went to the doctor at any point. It wouldn't matter. But when you eat, you raise blood sugar. How much it raises is going to, of course, depend on how metabolically healthy you are and the composition, mainly the composition of the meal, right? But pretty much anything is going to raise blood sugar somewhat. And if you raise blood sugar, you also must raise insulin because insulin is there to keep your blood sugar at a normal level because raised blood sugar makes your blood stickier and can create inflammation. If blood sugar's up and insulin's up, your body doesn't need to use stored fat for fuel because the message to the body is, hey, we got stuff here. We're fine. We don't need to access stored fat. So this doesn't make sense. And it's funny, as I started looking, I go, oh, that doesn't make, ooh, you're right. You know, I was like, why am I teaching this? I'm teaching it because it's a big old urban legend. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the thing, and this is where it gets so tricky, and I had to wrap my brain around this. You really have to, like, what's the best time to eat for each person? It's going to depend on that person. Some people initially, and there's going to be the rare person who's like, let's say, reactive hypoglycemia. Someone with reactive hypoglycemia, hey, you know what? They will have to eat more often. But that's not the typical person I'm talking about. Someone who's metabolically damaged, say they're very insulin resistant or very adrenally exhausted, they might have really bad blood sugar issues right now. They might have to eat every 2 to 3 hours while they're healing. But I got to tell you, Jackie, I was able to fix that in anyone I ever worked with within a couple of weeks, okay? Normally, within a week or two. And especially when you look at what most people choose for a snack. What do they choose? A piece of fruit, a 100-calorie snack pack, or one of those candy bars in disguise, the energy bars, okay? So they're eating something that pumps up blood sugar. The real issue is when should you eat? For most people, it's somewhere in that 4 to 6 hour range. And if they go too long, then they're going to raise stress hormones, right? If you don't eat, your body eats itself, and it's not snacking on your fat. It's going to snack on your muscles. So you want it's that window in there usually of 4 to 6 hours. Where
I need to I want to also ask you something because so many other experts, I do just want to underscore, completely say exactly what you're saying. I mean, I know I've heard this whole, you know, eat every 3 hours thing from some people, but everybody we work with actually says exactly what you do. And I just wanted you to clarify something because one person mentioned that if you're not used to eating 4 to 6 hours, if you're sort of used to something is wrong with your adrenals or just like you said, you help people, is it the same as when you're ratcheting up the fiber, meaning, you know, maybe at the beginning you might have to eat more frequently, but once you get into balance, you can easily go this 4 to 6 hour.
I think, you know what, Jackie, I think of a lot of it's Pavlovian. I think if you eat breakfast and then you are used to having a 10 o'clock, like, break, you've trained yourself.
Interesting.
And what would I say to do? Have some green tea, have a glass of water, try to stretch it out to 10:30 or 11, stretch it, right? Because you've trained yourself to go, okay, I have breakfast at 7, then I'm going to have this thing here, and so your body's going to expect it. So you're going to have to work with it to get there, but a lot of times you have trained yourself to want that kind of thing. If you just think about it, breakfast, lunch, a snack, and dinner, you know, 7
p.m. Well, you know, when we first designed the peer trainer log, that's what we did, and we had for a reason, and we had so many people go, you know, why did you arrange it like this? Why don't you arrange, you know, I eat every 3 hours, I eat every 2 hours.
Show me the science. I've seen one study that just came out that showed the thing with snacking, but there was no science. They did a study, but there were issues with that study, too, and I'm trying to think, because I actually had Jason, you can ask Jason, he'll send you what we wrote about it, because there were problems with the study. But you show me the science, because I can't make the science work. Yes, if you ate, you know, let's say that you ate, you want to make sure that everything is very low glycemic, very balanced. Maybe it won't be quite as much of a blood sugar response. You'd be okay. But the bigger issue is that's not what I see people do. They aren't snacking on a piece of chicken with some broccoli at 10 a.m., you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're having
no.
a snack pack. They're having some fruit. They're just
having a mocha.
They're having a mocha and a muffin, right?
So, they skipped breakfast, and so then it was
exactly.
10 o'clock after the huge meeting. They had the mocha and muffin, and by 12 o'clock, they're like, where is lunch?
So I would just ask you to consider this. Let's just look at it for a moment. Let's give it a shot. What would happen? Just try it. If you got up in the morning and you had your water, then you had your shake, then about an hour after your shake you had more water, maybe some green tea, then 30 to 60 minutes before your meal you had more water, then you ate your meal. So you had, let's say, you know, you got up at 6, you had breakfast at 7, you had water and green tea, you had lunch 11, 12. If you wanted to have a snack at 4, small one, and it's a protein carb snack. So that could be an apple with almond butter. That's, you know, mainly some fat and carbs with a little bit of protein. A cup of lentil soup, like great little snack. You know, a turkey roll up with some avocado, something. And then around 7, you had something. See how you feel. See how you feel. Because, again, I think we divorce ourselves from how I feel. I think the biggest reason that Weight Watchers makes me insane. Now, I love Weight Watchers for the support, but Peer Trainers kicks its butt in support,
yeah,
as we know.
Exactly.
And I believe the reason Weight Watchers works, and the only reason, there's two reasons I believe Weight Watchers works, and Peer Trainer kicks its butt on both of these, is support, well, you guys do better, and measuring and tracking, you guys do better. But where it sucks is on these points. And it was only recently that they started to wait and think, oh, maybe a cookie's different than an apple is different than a chicken breast. But, you know, what you measure, you can improve. But what I found with people who were using Weight Watchers, they got so divorced from how they felt, and if they were really hungry, it all got to be about, well, I'm supposed to eat this now, and I got my points here, and I'm like, oh, good Lord. You know, are you hungry? You know? Or you just mm-hmm. supposed to, you just get your ice cream bar treat now, and all of a sudden you're looking forward to the next treat and the next thing, and if you know,
that's
ice cream bar is the same as the others, what are you going to choose?
And I do have to also just add, I think I am one of those genetically lucky people in the sense that I don't think I'm starving, like, you know, what you were explaining before. But I, you know, when you compare my mother and I, she was just in town, which is why I'm bringing this up. And she is still, you know, eating like she's on the cleanse, even though she had been through the 2 weeks. She needed so much more salad than I did. She just did. I mean, I made us both the same salad, and she needed more, and she did not feel okay. We had the same amount of protein, same amount of fat, you know, avocado going on there. But until I just threw, you know, literally almost double the salad that I had had. She was not okay. And so that's just always a good strategy as well, is to, you know, check in with, just like you're saying, like listening to your body and checking in with yourself. And did you eat enough? You know, for me, if I, just like you said, if I don't have enough sleep and I didn't eat enough at breakfast, I am set up for not so good of a day. So just to also, you know, underscore that of what you're saying of, you know, I just, again, I love when you say your body's not a bank account. You can't sit there and be like, well, I had vegetables all week. Why isn't today better? It's really the lab to see what's going on.
Yeah, it is. And so this, again, I'm going to take it to another level, and this is where tracking and recording and kind of like getting mindful becomes so important, because everybody is different. And hey, in my perfect world, I could take every single person, test their genetics, test their adrenals, test their, you know. But again, tomorrow it's different. The genes don't change, but you know, but you know so much about yourself. And what's so interesting is when I can really talk to someone and ask them all these questions, they pretty much can tell you,
mm-hmm.
boy, I really have a sweet tooth. Well, genetically, you can just, I'm one of those people who's hungrier than the average person. I don't, you know, and it's like, it's, I get that all in a genetics test, but we can pretty well design it. I mean, I used to be a vegetarian and a vegan. I felt terrible. I was way heavier. I was fatter. I struggled. I do way better on a low-carb diet. Well, I'm a low-carb genotype. I believe everybody does better with clean, lean animal protein genetically. We are supposed to eat it. Sorry, I know I'm going to upset some people. I know you're probably going to change it. Hush!
We talked about that. Obviously, everyone knows we're still continuing with that discussion.
That discussion and the debate continues. But, you know, hey, we also need loads of vegetables. So loads of vegetables, some clean, lean protein, healthy fats. How much you need personally is different for every single person. It's different for everybody.
Salad to salad, day to day. I'm not joking. There are days that literally I have, I'll have some chicken and I'll have some avocado and I'll have, you know, my salad. But then the next day I'll say, oh, I really need some cashews in there. I really need a little more fat. I'm hungry. And then the next day it's a day to day kind of thing. So anyway, just there. I have a quick question. Prior to starting the cleanse, I was following Furman's eating plan. I was having healthy bowel movements every day, if not twice a day. Starting the cleanse, I feel great. Love the shakes, but haven't been having a bowel movement daily. Sometimes it's every 3 days. I don't feel bloated. I do use the MediBulk. I haven't been eating a ton of vegetables because I'm not that hungry. I have the shake twice a day, some lean protein and veggie for dinner. Is the lack of bowel movements okay?
Well, you know how I feel about bowel movements.
I know the start of your answer.
Yeah. Okay. You if you went poop in the toilet and left it there, what would happen?
It would get really smelly and gross.
You need to go to the bathroom 1 to 3 times a day. Very important. If that's not happening, it's interesting because you really shouldn't have reduced your fiber much, but I'd love to see you, you know, I don't really know how much less vegetables you're eating, but let's get those, let's pump those. I would hate to see you reduce your vegetables. That my heart aches hearing that, so please bring your vegetables back up. Crank those veggies at dinner, okay? And then if you are still not having those regular bowel movements, but you were before, I have a feeling as long as you do that, everything should be fine. If not, you know the drill here. I would actually start throwing in the kale and spinach into your shakes. Frozen organic kale, by the way, is my new like bombshell.
Yeah, and, I know. I love it.
Good. Magnesium, vitamin C, enzymes, and probiotics. There we go. And I think we've got that kind of written all over the place. Okay.
Yeah. So the next one, let me say overall I'm quite happy with the cleanse. It was difficult in the beginning. It's gotten easier in most respects as the cleanse has gone, as I worked out a system that works for me. Today's day 11. I'm thrilled by the fact that I've lost 7 pounds in 10 days, given that perhaps my primary motivation for going on the cleanse is weight loss resistance. So that's a breakthrough. Question number one, should I be afraid that the weight is going to jump back on? No, we already said that. We actually just answered that once I transitioned to a normal diet. We answered that like, I think about 5 minutes ago. Question number two, I'm lacto ovo.
Okay, the cheat diet. What is your cheat diet? Because you guys have a cheat diet or something.
Yeah, it's the cheat system. So it is you can eat as much as you want on the left side, and you can you count 10 cheats on the right-hand side. So you can imagine what's on the left side. Vegetables, a lot of vegetables. Your first serving of chicken, you know, organic chicken or grass-fed beef, or you get the idea.
But the cheat system, if they were incorporating kind of going back into your, I mean, first of all, I think here's the question with this question. We're going to give you what to go to next, so don't worry.
Right. True. Perfect.
Okay.
Question number two, I'm lacto-ovo-vegetarian who occasionally eats fish, although I've been eating more fish on the cleanse to adhere to the requirements. But if I want a snack, turkey's not an option. Can you recommend some more vegetarian snacks? Yes, I'll do that. I haven't been snacking aside with celery with salt. One of my favorite is a little bean salsa and avocado, and it's incredible with a little bit of
lentil
spinach.
Soup, hummus on celery, almond butter on celery. You know, I mean, veggies and, a little layered bean dip, black beans, pureed black beans with green chilies.
I love that.
Salsa.
So good.
Guac. I mean, yeah.
Jalapeno. Tomatoes. And sometimes I throw some tomatoes in there. I will say hummus and celery and has been, and I also love to slice open cucumbers. I slice them lengthwise, and then I scoop out the seeds. So I call them, my kids call them cucumber boats. So you can really put anything in there. And sometimes cucumber has a lot less texture and flavor sometimes than celery. So I use that as a go-to dip chip, cucumbers, a lot.
Yeah. Cucumbers, the other cucumber usage that is putting them in your water and then you feel like you're at a spa.
Oh,
I love that.
Spa. Isn't that
love.
The best?
And why am I so lazy about that? It's the biggest question.
Sometimes I do cucumbers and I put in a few raspberries into a huge pitcher.
Yeah, you live so large, Jackie, I swear. You are my idol.
It's so good. You can't imagine.
I'm coming to your house. It's just like when I went to Leanne Ely's house. I'm going, I'm just moving in, man. That's it. It's not my stuff. I'm staying.
And also my you know, everyone knows Habib has invented the term insane man hunger. So he is really king of these snacks. And the biggest thing, especially if you want another snack, is chili. You know, you don't have to have so many of the beans, but
you make veggie chili. You know, here's the deal with chili. Put some zucchini and mushrooms in there.
Exactly. And mushrooms have all those selenium and all that great stuff. And he makes huge vats of chili, so he always has something hanging out. But I do have to say the quick things that I always like is I always have these I call them the go-to. You have to have your go-to foods. Otherwise, if you're really starving, you got caught for some reason, you just want to eat, you know, pizza, or you sort of start to get those cravings. So the hummus has been one of the easiest things that I do, and sometimes, as strange as this will sound, but maybe one day, you'll like it, is I always have a fresh tub of washed mixed greens and washed spinach, like just the tubs that they're already made for you, and I always have romaine lettuce leaves. And the romaine lettuce leaves make fantastic wraps for anything.
They do.
If you have leftover fish or salmon from the night before, you take a little bit, you roll it up in a romaine lettuce wrap, and you have like the most perfect snack. And sometimes I dip it in salsa, and it's phenomenal.
Love it. Hey, so and then another thing for that man, get him on that appestation in satiacin, man. Get him on it. He'll be a great tester for that, right?
The insane man hunger, I know. Well, he doesn't have as much anymore, but he used to come up with recipes only to cure insane man hunger. That was,
the whole
objective.
Now, this next person, did you read this thing about the person who said that we're like, isn't this great? We have been acknowledging hunger all day today on this cleanse here.
Yes. Yes, and I think we're also addressing that person. And, you know, I did read that. She said, you know, I'm disappointed that, you know, the shakes aren't enough. And please, you know, this quote, please acknowledge that some of us are really experiencing difficulties and that everyone's experience is unique. I have to tell you that my mother was the same way. By day six, on the first week, she said, "Jackie, I just don't understand. You are so different from me. I am always hungry, and I just am going to eat a house, and I don't think I can deal." And this is literally day six. And interestingly, I asked, you know, what's your vegetable intake been like? What's your protein intake been like? And what's your fat intake? And when she really sat and she was honestly listening to my question, she told me that she had really been portion controlling too much, that in her mind that JJ had given her permission to eat more, but that it just seemed like she wasn't going to be excited to lose, she wasn't going to have this great weight loss success. So she looked at what she was doing. She said, you know, when I have salmon, I'm not having enough. When I have avocado, I'm portioning out to this little tiny thing. When I have vegetables, I'm so scared and that I'm not going to have success. And the second she really looked at what she had been doing, suddenly, and this, I'm telling you, this is my mother is always hungry. Suddenly she said, the next day she was fine. The next day she said, I can't believe it. I went out, I really ate the recommended portions of everything, and I was finally satiated. And then, as everyone knows, because I've sort of been weaving my mom throughout this call, you know, she's still losing weight. She's been off the cleanse. I mean, I think she got through with it maybe like a couple weeks ago. So just for your, you know, just really also do me a favor, just do examine your portions. Maybe that's not what it is, and I'm glad that, you know, JJ has put together a pack for that. But that was just part of her aha moment that she was actually portion controlling even more because she wanted to be so successful in the cleanse.
And just drink up. My goodness, drink up, drink up. You know, I drink so much water, and I know, Miss Jackie, you now do too because you were a bad water girl prior to this.
I do, but I was. I was. I admit it.
Yeah, the water, and I am so hooked on this ice green tea from Coffee Bean. Big shout out to Japanese cherry ice green tea from Coffee Bean. I don't know if you've had this, but if you don't have a Coffee Bean in your area, you may want to order this stuff. Oh, my gosh. You should go online and get this Coffee Bean ice green tea. It is that good, I'm telling you.
Wow. And you know what I like? I don't know how to pronounce it because I'm not Japanese, but you live there. Maybe you do. That genmaicha. Do you know what I'm talking about? Genmaicha or something? We have it, and it's sort of the authentic Japanese green tea that's made from rice and tea leaves. And it tastes exactly – you don't eat the rice, obviously. But it tastes exactly like the tea from the Japanese restaurants. And, I mean, that's just a big, big fan of it. Of course, it still has a little caffeine. Anyway, moving on, another question for the Q&A. I just spent the afternoon licking envelopes for Christmas cards. I'm reading online that while gluten-free, the glue is derived from cornstarch. Does this mean I just screwed up by ingesting corn and now my sensitivity test for that will not be accurate?
Okay, first of all, corn's not the biggest ones I'm most concerned about are gluten, eggs, soy and dairy for pulling out. I mean, I want corn out because it's GMO, high sugar, and just in everything. I mean, it just shows you how corn is in everything. Isn't that sick? But don't stress out about that. We're fine. But I love your attention to detail. A+ on that. But isn't it just amazing, though? How pathetic. Now, if you are doing a test, an actual blood test, a food sensitivity test, IgG, and you've been licking stamps, and let's say you were totally corn-free for 6 months, which, by the way, if you have not watched that King Corn documentary, you must watch this. Of course, my kids are like, Mom, you know, I make them watch all these things, and they're like, Mom.
I watched them. Food Inc. really covered a lot of the corn stuff going on, but I'm sure it's different.
Oh, this is corn to a whole other level, but it turns out, like, the corn thing, it's like we all are eating corn because everything's got corn in it. It is obscene. So,
cows are even eating corn now.
I think I told you the sad story about actually the chicken at Whole Foods that was being fed soy, and my poor client was like, I don't understand why I'm testing positive for soy. I haven't been eating it. We found it was in the Whole Foods chicken But, you know, I mean, you do the very best you do, but, and I do see people reactive to corn, but it's more that corn's GMO. It's in everything. It's high glycemic. The big, big, and it is inflammatory, but, you know, I'm going to let you have a pass on that envelope there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, just the envelope. next one, I have a question about food sensitivity to nuts. Been snacking with a little bit of almond butter each day, noticing my throat feels kind of clogged up and phlegm-filled afterwards. Have I discovered that I'm sensitive to almonds? I'm going to cut them out, too, and see what happens next.
Okay, that's, you know, here's the thing. Phlegm in your throat can be a lot of different things. One of the classic things that phlegm in your throat is, I hate to say this because it's just disgusting, is it's one of the places candida overgrowth shows up. Yeast throat. Ick. You're supposed to react to that, Jack, and go, ew.
I didn't, no, you went in and out. What did you just say?
Candida can show up in your throat with like a yeasty, that's a big place for like a yeast overgrowth.
Oh,
oh God, dork one and two. Okay, so Jackie and I, by the way, are going to be we're going to finally hang out together, Jackie, and I can't wait.
Me too. Uh-huh.
Okay, but anyway, so what I would say is if you eat something you feel funky, stop eating it and see if you feel better. You know, if you've never been eating nuts, you eat nuts and you like don't feel good. It's a pretty good sign that nuts aren't working for you. But if you still notice the phlegm and it wasn't the nuts, I mean, you could be reacting to another food. But one of the classic things there, I just want to throw it out there because I didn't know this one, and it was unfortunately I have this, is candida overgrowth can show up as phlegm in your throat.
I did not know that. Well, I have to say, if I have cheese, which I haven't in a long time, but when I used to have cheese, I would wake up in the morning or even in the middle of the night, and I remember having trouble breathing, you know, just – and I knew for a fact it was cheese just because I would – well, maybe not. Who knows what it was, but I remember feeling that way now that I – well, I can't even say no for a fact anymore because I've already told you this, and everybody's already heard this, but I wouldn't have thought in a million years I had a food sense that eggs affected me in any way. So now I sort of feel like I don't know all the exact things anymore. But anyway, then final one, Jackie, embarrassing question for the call. I understand that the first week is a period of transition adjustments to the increase in stink. Yeah, the stink. The stink thing, which you talked about and you put together, you know, for the people that did not order Plus, we're going to put that together just so that you can upgrade and so that you know, because obviously, JJ, you said how important those extra supplements are if you're having stinky flatulence problems.
Okay, yeah, and so the other one I want to make sure you make available, and I want you to put your man hunger dude – Habib, if you're listening, babe, you're going on this. we're gonna do our own little science experiment with Habib on the apostation and the satiocin, and I want him to weigh in. In fact, I want all a peer trainer to follow him.
Wait, and also, are you going to put the Relora in there as well?
You know, we could have the two and then the three. I mean, I love, personally, most people, stress plays a big role. So you've got the serotonin, dopamine balancing. I mean, I'd love to see all three.
Okay.
As the big kahuna, because I already asked the president of Thorne, I'm like, please make me a packet, please, please, please. So maybe if you email over there and go, please, we want a packet, he'll listen to you. Because I think, wouldn't you want that? I mean, wouldn't you all listening, if you could have a little packet that helps you blast that appetite and those cravings and that stress-induced freak out, I got to eat now and have some, you know, cupcakes. Wouldn't you love that? I want it. Sign me up.
And you need all the help you can get. You know, so many people tend to beat themselves up. Like, why didn't I just have enough willpower? Or, you know, I really want this. I really want to look good at my reunion. Why do I keep sabotaging myself? If those are some of the questions that you ask yourself, you really need to say, hey, listen, I got to use all the tools. I got to just stop beating myself up, you know, and say, okay, let me move on and let me see how many different things I can use to really help. Because I know a lot of people, they might have that kind of personality also where they're just almost like, I can do this. I'll never need help. And sometimes that can really set you up, you know.
Well, you know, the other thing is like, why make it hard? You know?
That's what I mean. Exactly. Exactly. I mean, just use the help that you have at your disposal. So we'll definitely be putting those together. Well,
yeah,
JJ, thank you.
I don't find any reason to make anything hard. Life is hard enough, isn't it?
Well, that's what I think. And I have to say, you know, the workouts, you know, the fact that you've given people permission to do the shorter workout. I know Mom the other day who just said to me, you know, if I am having so much trouble because if I'm going to work out, I have to work out for 2 hours. I mean, how many moms with three young children have 2 hours to dedicate to making themselves feel better? So, you know, that's also been a real...
Okay, I have to share something, though, with everybody that I did while I was in Las Vegas.
Okay.
Just as like, I did the most amazing workout I never would have thought of. One of my friends said, we're going to go do this workout. You're going to love it. Of course, I thought I was going to throw up, to be honest with you. But I never would have thought of this. We went to the fashion show mall over in Las Vegas early in the morning because, you know, no one's awake. The security guard, however, I thought was going to go, like, what are you doing? And we ran the down escalators.
Oh, right, like the mall workout. Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
I think that's popular. And, I mean, I know some people that do it, but I don't know that they're actually doing the escalator part of it. That's pretty amazing.
It's a whole other level. I know. It was so incredible. It was. And then I went and did all these new kettlebell works. Literally, I got home last night, and I went to bed at 7.
Wow.
Before
you told us, I was about to say, wait, isn't like what happens there stays there? That sounds awesome, though. I love it when you just can get in those little spurts. It's funny because when I take my son to tennis and I'm with my daughter, who most of the time doesn't want to play tennis, she's always working me out. She's 5 and she's my little trainer because she doesn't want to go on the tennis court. Sometimes she does and she'll go chase balls or do stuff. But she's always coming up with some sort of workout we're about to do, like, Mommy, let's go see the garden. I got to see it. And, of course, you know, I'm running with her. So it's always good to get those things, you know, that just randomly come up. Anyway, we're done with our questions. Are there any live questions?
I just want to make
sure. I know. I want to make sure we're not leaving anyone out. Bernice, is there anybody that had a question and just, you know, now was waiting patiently?
We did have one, but it looks like she dropped off the call. So we have no questions.
Okay, great.
On us, we like went off on a whole different tangent about, you know,
I know. We'll send this out. If there's something really pressing, you know, please do reach out and ask whatever, ask away. And, JJ, thanks again because I know you made time during so many different appointments and different things, and we'll get all those packages out to everybody.
My pleasure. It's always fun.
All right. I know.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
See you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.